Thriving, Not Surviving, with your host, Gina Gardner. To lead others, you first need to be the best version of yourself and lead from a place of wholeness. Motivation, empowerment, leadership, personal and spiritual development are just a few of the topics you will hear on Thriving, Not Surviving. So sit back and enjoy the show with your host, Gina Gardner.
Hello there, and welcome to BBS Radio. It's Gina Gardner here. I'm the host of Thriving, Not Surviving, and I am absolutely thrilled to welcome my guest today. Many of you may recognise her because she is so well known. Marcy Shomoff, welcome, welcome, welcome.
Thank you. It's so delightful to be here with you, Gina.
Thank you. Now, our paths crossed a few years ago when I was on your Year of Miracles program. And in many ways, what I am doing now with the Enlightened Leadership program, that started off in that course. When I was going through that program, I had recognized that my purpose needed to be bigger. And what that program taught me is don't limit yourself. And so out of that program came my mission, which was to positively impact on 1 million people within the next 5 years. But it's not about me, it's about you. And I'm going to read your bio because I want to get it right. Marcy Shomoff is a number one New York Times bestselling author, a world-renowned transformational teacher, and an expert on happiness, success, and unconditional love. Her New York Times bestselling books, Happy for No Reason, Love for No Reason, and 6 titles in the Chicken Soup for the Women's Soul series have sold more than 16 million copies and are translated into 33 languages. She's also a featured teacher in The Secret and narrator of the award-winning movie Happy. She currently co-leads a global online program called Your Year of Miracles to help people live more miraculous lives. I'm just so thrilled to have you here because you've made a huge difference to my life, and I know that you make such a difference to everybody else.
Well, thank you so much. And I just want to commend you for taking that inspired action forward to do this wonderful series that you're doing, because I know it is a great service to the world. So I congratulate you.
Thank you very much indeed. Can you share with us a bit of your story? I mean, how does somebody get to do all of this? Where did it happen? How did it happen?
So I am the least likely person in the world to be speaking about happiness because I was born depressed. I came out of the womb. I tease that I came out of the womb with existential angst. And I had a great family. I had a great childhood on the outside, but inside I just had this sort of dark cloud around me. And that continued with me throughout my growing up years, my teenage years. And when I was in my 20s, I did what I think a lot of people do. I set goals for myself. And I figured once I reach those goals, then I'll be happy. Mm-hmm. And I'll share with you the 5 goals that I set because I think a lot of people will be able to relate to them. I thought I wanted to have a successful career helping people. Mm-hmm. I wanted to have a wonderful husband or life partner, fabulous friends, a comfortable home, and the equivalent of Halle Berry's body. Okay. Now, I have 4 out of the 5. I do not have Halle Berry's body.
It's not bad, though.
Thank you. I have a healthy body, for which I'm very, very grateful. And I will tell you that I just worked so hard to get all my ducks in a row and make all those things happen, and I had a turning point moment. It was in 1998. I had 3 books in the top 5 on the New York Times bestseller list at the same time. I had just finished giving a speech to 8,000 people.
Goodness.
And I had autographed 5,432 books. My client had had a massage therapist there to massage my hand so I wouldn't get carpal tunnel. And I felt like an author rock star, really.
Yeah, I bet.
But I will tell you that after I autographed that last book, I went up to my hotel room, which was the penthouse suite that my client had gotten for me. And I walked over to these big windows overlooking Lake Michigan. It was in Chicago, and I took in this spectacular view, and I turned around and I fell onto the bed and burst into tears. And I burst into tears because I realized I had everything I thought I needed to be happy, and I still wasn't. I still had that deep pain in my heart, that feeling of emptiness, something's wrong. And I realized I could no longer continue to fool myself anymore into thinking that just that next thing was going to fix it. And so I dove headfirst into happiness. I said, I'm going to figure this thing out. What's it going to take for me to be happy? And I studied all the researchers out there on happiness. I interviewed them. I interviewed 100 what I call unconditionally happy people. And I started doing what they suggested, and it worked. I went from, if you were grading us in the American system at least, I went from a D plus in happiness to an A. And that's not to say that I'm not still working on it. I am a work in progress. I am always working on it. But it made such a huge difference in my life that I said, I've got to share this with people. And that's why I wrote Happy for No Reason, and why I'm here speaking with you today about how we can be happy no matter what's going on.
I think for so many people, I mean, your story will resonate. But it seems to me that, you know, I call it the I'll be happy when complex. And no sooner have you reached the goals, then actually you're not satisfied, and there's more, and there's more, and there's more. And it's always in the future, and you're never there. And I know that so many people miss out such a lot because they just choose not to recognize that in the moment that they can have it all.
Well, you're exactly right. You know, we do have this big myth of happiness that you referred to perfectly. It's the I'll be happier when myth. I'll be happier when I get a better job, or I'll be happier when I make more money, or I'll be happier when I get married, or I'll be happier when I get divorced.
Yes.
Or look at this one. So many people used to say, oh, I would just be so happy if I could have a couple weeks at home without any pressure. And look, now there have been a lot of people saying, oh, I wish if I could only get back to work. So it's always something outside of us. And Gina, there is a reason for this. And the reason is, the reason that doesn't work is because when we get what we thought we needed, we very quickly get acclimated, and we know it no longer gives us that juice. It's because we all have something called a happiness set point.
Okay.
And I have to explain this because to me this helped me understand everything.
Yeah. Okay.
We all have a happiness set point. It's like a thermostat setting.
Okay.
And no matter what happens to us, whether it's good or bad, we will tend to hover around our thermostat setting.
Okay.
So if you win the lottery, you think, oh, then I'd be happy. Well, you would be. You'd be happier for a few months. But within about a year, the research shows that you will return to your original happiness level.
Yeah.
And the same is true of people when we have challenges. You know, we go through a pandemic and we think, oh, I'll never come back.
Yeah.
But we actually will return to our original happiness set point. So the set point is the key. And what we need to do is we need to change the happiness set point. And this, here's how you do it. The set point is only 10% our circumstances. And okay, that's what everybody's so busy trying to change. It's only 10% of the pie.
And I would think people think it's going to be a much higher proportion than that.
You are exactly right. This is why we get so consumed in changing our circumstances, because we think it's the key. It's only 10%. It's 50% our genetics. And most people think that can't be changed, but in a moment I'm going to tell you that in fact it can be. And the other 40% is our habits of thoughts and behavior. And that's what we can do the most about to change our happiness set point. But there are scientists in the field of epigenetics, people like Dr. Bruce Lipton, who wrote The Biology of Belief. And they are saying that when we change those habits of thoughts and behavior, that will actually influence our DNA. Which says to me that 90% of our happiness set point can be influenced by our habits. And that, I think, should be headline news. That's like, we can all really influence our happiness. And so I know we're going to get really practical and go into some specific ways that you, right now, can start changing your habits to be happier.
But if it's 90% of you can, you can change, and
yes.
the research that I've read says that 95% of everything most people do is habitual. If you recognize your habitual patterns and you take charge, I call it taking radical responsibility for what you do, then you have absolute choice in terms of whether you're happy or not, don't you?
I love that, radical responsibility.
Yeah.
That is a beautiful term. Yes, because the reality is we are completely able to change our happiness set point and therefore affect our happiness. We are not victims of our circumstances. And by the way, this is why I call it being happy for no reason. It doesn't mean that you're walking around 24/7 with a silly grin on your face and you're in some Pollyanna state of denial. What I mean by happy for no reason is that you have an inner state of peace and well-being that doesn't depend on your circumstances. So when there are challenging circumstances, as we've been seeing, as we see, that it's not that we aren't affected by them.
Yeah.
Yes, we are. We may feel angry. We may feel frustrated. We may feel sad.
Yeah.
We may feel grief. We may feel all of those things. But we have this inner backdrop of peace and well-being that allows us to be more resilient and bounce back.
That fits so much with not only what I believe, but also my own circumstances in life, that, you know, difficult things
yes.
happen, don't they? That's called life. But ultimately, it's our choice what we do with them. And you can use it as a learning opportunity and move forward, focus on what you can do rather than what you can't. Or you can get stuck in the quicksand, can't you, of poor me and being a victim. And, you know, I find it really interesting how many people choose to give their power to somebody else. I'll feel happy if my partner is nice to me. I'll feel happy if the boss recognises what I've done. Always looking externally rather than looking for the gold inside. It's very
And that is so true. It is. And I just want to say you are a beautiful example of taking responsibility for your life and for your happiness, regardless of circumstances. And, you know, you model this in such an amazing way. And you know, what I've found is that the difference between happy people and everybody else is merely that they have these different habits. And I found that there are 21 main happiness habits, and they fall into 7 main areas. And maybe, shall we spend just a moment talking about those 7 areas?
Please, yeah, absolutely.
So what I found is that it's hard for anybody to remember 7 of anything. So I created an analogy or a metaphor.
Okay.
I call it building your inner home for happiness. And a home has 7 main areas, and I'm going to go through how those 7 areas relate to happiness. A home has a foundation, 4 corner pillars, a roof, and a garden. So that's our analogy here. And as I go through this, I want you to look at where in your life are you the weakest.
Okay.
Because if you can identify where you're the weakest and start there, you will have the greatest shifts in the shortest amount of time. So the foundation is taking responsibility for your life and for your happiness. It's just what you spoke about, radical responsibility. It's about showing up in life not as a victim of life, but as a creator or a co-creator of life. So you know that you're a victim if you find yourself blaming, shaming, or complaining. Those are victim behaviors. So that's the first area, is instead of being a victim, showing up with, as you would call it, radical responsibility.
Right.
Then the other areas, we've got the 4 pillars.
Yeah.
And the pillars are the pillar of the mind, the heart, the body, and the soul. The pillar of the mind has to do with our thoughts. Do you have thought patterns that are supporting your happiness, or are they dragging you down, your thoughts? Then there's the heart, the inner chatter. And we'll spend a little bit of time. We'll come back to that after we go through this analogy. And we'll come back to that and maybe give you a practice for that.
Brilliant. Thank you.
Then there's the pillar of the heart. And the heart has to do with, are you living with an open heart?
Mm-hmm.
Happy people have an open heart. They live with gratitude, loving kindness, forgiveness, generosity. openness. So that's that pillar. Then there's the pillar of the body. Do you have the biochemistry of happiness? Do you have enough of the right happiness chemicals, the endorphins, the serotonin, the melatonin, the oxytocin? And then there's the pillar of the soul. Do you feel connected to your soul and to a greater energy in the universe? Do you live a soul-driven life? Do you feel connected to life? And then there's the roof of your home for happiness, and the roof has to do with living a purposeful life. Okay. Are you living your purpose and passion? Are you inspired? Do you wake up saying, I know I am here and I'm doing my purpose? And then finally, there's the garden.
Okay.
And the garden has to do with who you surround yourself with. Do you have a garden of gardenias and roses? These would be the people who support your happiness. Or do you have a garden of weeds or toxic people who are dragging you down? Yeah. And so those are the seven areas. And I just want to quickly review those. And I want everybody to answer for themselves. Where are you the weakest? Yeah. There's the foundation.
Yeah.
Are you taking responsibility for your life? There's the mind, the heart, the body, the soul, the four pillars. There's the roof. Are you living an inspired life? Mm-hmm. And then there's the garden. Who are you surrounding yourself with? And I can tell you, my weakest, my Achilles heel has always been the body. I did not have a lot of good biochemistry of happiness, and I've had to work on that. And that's what changed the most for me. So, Gina, I'd just love to ask you, where are you the weakest, do you think?
I would say body too, but probably for different reasons, and body, not mind. I'm reminded, I was on a program, and they asked us to do values, and I'd done value work several times. Now, bearing in mind, I was completely wheelchair-bound at this time. Health wasn't one of my values. Mm. It didn't feature. And wow. So... I'm a recovering workaholic. Work is great pain control, but I took it to an art form, and long after the body's screaming stop, I'll keep going. So that's something that it's a work in motion. I'm very blessed in that my happiness point is well set,
right, yeah.
And although I'll have dark days, as do we all, it doesn't take me long to get back to that place. And I think the biggest reason for that is I have got such a strong sense of purpose. I know what I'm here for. And if I'm feeling fed up or I'm feeling low, my purpose is what drives me to think, do you know what? I'll get on with it. And of course, very quickly, when you're doing something that you care about and that you love to do, you feel better, don't you? And if
absolutely.
It's service for somebody, to help other people, then it's a double whammy. But I always have to be very, very conscious of the body.
Yes, yes. Well, thank you for sharing that. And I find that there are many people, I'm one of those as well, who tends to be a workaholic.
Yeah.
And it's so important to honor the body.
Yes.
And there are many people who are listening to this who are saying, but I don't know my purpose. I'm not inspired. That's what I need to focus on. And there are many people who are saying, oh, but it's my thoughts. My thoughts just go in a downward spiral. They get me all the time. So why don't we share a couple of practical things that people can do immediately to feel better tomorrow or today?
Thank you. Yes.
Good, good. All right. So the very first one, I'm going to share with you a practice called the Inner Ease Technique.
Okay.
And I learned this from a group called the Institute of Heart Math. They're the world's leading researchers on the heart and happiness. And what they have found is that when we are stuck in anger or frustration for even 5 minutes, that can weaken our immune system for up to 6 hours.
Goodness. And it had an impact, but not that it was that immediate and that long.
It's a long-term impact, but the opposite is also true. When we are sitting in love and gratitude for 5 minutes, it can strengthen our immune system for up to 6 hours. So I'm going to give you this practice. It's not going to be 5 minutes. It's just going to be a minute or two, but I want everybody to notice how you feel different. It's going to move us in what's called heart rhythm synchrony. heart rhythm coherence, where our heart rhythms become very coherent. And that's a very strong state to help our overall well-being and health. Okay. So practice you can do with your eyes opened or closed. For our purposes, let's just do it with our eyes closed. I think it goes a little bit deeper.
Okay.
And it'll be just a moment. That's all. And Gina, I'm going to ask you to be my guinea pig, which means when we're done with this, I'm going to ask you to notice how you feel any different when okay. we're done. Okay.
Right.
Okay. So with our eyes closed, there's three steps. The first step is to simply place the palm of your hand over your heart. Now, that simple act of putting your hand on your heart starts the flow of a chemical called oxytocin. And oxytocin is dubbed the love hormone because it's what we have more of when we feel love, when we feel bonded and connected to each other. But just right now, having your hand on your own heart is stimulating the flow of oxytocin. Now, the second step is to imagine that you're breathing in and out through the center of your heart. So imagine that you're inhaling into your heart and exhaling out of your heart. Inhaling into your heart and exhaling out of your heart. And you can continue that at your own pace. Just noticing that when you breathe in, that you're breathing into your heart. And when you breathe out, you're breathing out of your heart. Now, the third and final step is on each inhale, imagine that you are breathing in love, ease, and compassion. The exhales, you're just breathing normally out of your heart. But the inhales, every inhale, breathe in love, ease, and compassion. And exhale out of your heart. Now do this at your own pace, and you can think of someone or something that allows you to feel love, ease, and compassion, or a memory of feeling that. Or you can just internally say the words love, ease, and compassion. Doesn't matter. Both will have the same similar effect. Breathing into your heart one more time, love, ease, and compassion. And on your next exhale, you can slowly take your hand away. And when you feel ready, you can slowly open your eyes. And as you're opening your eyes and coming back into the room, I want you to just notice, how do you feel any different now than you did a minute and a half ago? And how did you feel different physically, or how did you feel different emotionally? And Gina, you're my guinea pig, so tell me, how do you feel any different?
The first thing is that there is a sense of warmth that mm-hmm. started where my hand was, and that felt quite logical, but actually, as I breathe, so it's spread around my body. And there's an advert, shows my age, it was for a breakfast cereal called Ready Breck, where in the advert there was this orange glow that came outside the child once it's eaten, it's Ready Breck, and that sense of warmth and expansion felt as if it went beyond my physical body.
And wonderful.
Lighter. And I had a great mood before we started. So if you can do it when you're in a great mood, just think what it's going to do for people who are feeling anxious or frustrated or unhappy.
Yes. And so what's interesting about this, by the way, what you just mentioned, feeling lighter, feeling warmth, different people experience it differently. Some people feel more grounded, more centered, more calm. Some people have tingling. All of these are indications that you're moving into what science calls the love response. Right. And the love response is the opposite of the stress response, which we're all familiar with. Yeah. And it has its own biochemistry, its own brain waves, its own heart rhythms. Yeah. And so doing this once is just a nice experience. But here's what I'm going to recommend that you do. If you were to do this simple exercise, you could do it with your eyes opened or closed, a couple of times a day for the next 2 weeks. What you'll find is you'll be habituating the love response, so that now I've done this so many times, all I have to do is go like that, and my whole body takes over that feeling. So I do this when I'm standing in line at the grocery store, or queuing, as you would say, or standing in queue, or when I'm on the phone speaking with somebody. It's very, very easy to incorporate into your day. and just use your own life as an experiment to test it out and see how it works for you.
It's brilliant. Thank you so much. We're getting to the end of our time, and I could talk to you forever. And at some point, I'd love you to come back for us to carry on this conversation. But where can people find you? And you know, how can, obviously your books, you have a wide range of books, but I know you've got something else that you've just launched, haven't you?
I do. So before I tell you that, may I just tell you one other practical thing that people can do? Because I just want to leave you with one other practical thing.
Yeah.
The practical thing has to do with our mind and our thoughts. Yeah. And I know people can, lately, there can be a lot of spinning of just going over and over. Am I going to be okay? Is everything going to be okay? Yeah. Or catastrophizing, spiraling down. Here's what I want you to know about our thoughts. We have 60,000 thoughts a day. And for the average person, 80% of them are negative. We inherited this. It's called the negativity bias. We inherited it from our caveman ancestors. And I want to give you a little antidote that's a scientific antidote to negative thinking if you find yourself caught in negative thoughts. And it's three steps. And the first step is be on the lookout for the positive. Be on the lookout for the good. One of the women I interviewed for Happy for No Reason says that she pretends that she is the Academy Awards committee. And every day her job is to give out 5 Academy Awards. So she'll be walking in the park and she'll see a cute little fluffy white dog and she'll say, that dog gets the cutest dog of the day award. Yeah. So be on the lookout for giving away at least 5 Academy Awards every day.
Brilliant.
The second step is to savor the good. It takes at least 20 seconds for the good to really land to create new neural pathways in the brain. So don't just notice something and walk away,
Yes. But
really take it in. So if it's a beautiful sunset, don't just say, oh, that's a beautiful sunset, but say, oh, what a beautiful sunset. Let me enjoy this for 20 seconds. And then the third thing is go for the 3-to-1 ratio. That means for every negative you have, you replace it with 3 positives. So 3 positive to every 1 negative. If you follow this simple formula, you will start to raise your happiness set point right away.
I talk about collecting gratitude during the day, but I just love the Academy Awards because that makes me smile as well, which just adds to it. Fabulous. Thank you very much indeed.
And so I know that we only had time to go through a few of these happiness habits. So what I want to offer to everyone here is a gift of mine, and that is I have a workbook that I put together of the 21 happiness habits. And in that workbook, you have, with each habit, you've got one specific exercise or practice that you can do. And along with that is a happiness questionnaire to see where you are in the happiness continuum. So that is my gift to all of you.
Absolutely fabulous. Thank you very much indeed. And we will put the link in the show notes.
But perfect.
People will also put where people can find you, but I also know that you've just you have a program going, and I wonder whether you'd just very quickly like to share that.
Yes.
Come to an end.
So people can find me on my Happy for No Reason website, and we do have a program of training people to become happiness trainers, certified happiness trainers, and that's available on my Happy for No Reason website. And then also we have the Year of Miracles program that you were a part of, and people can find that at yearyearofmiracles.com.
And I can thoroughly recommend it. Thank you so much. It's been an absolute joy to have you on the program, and I do hope you'll come back and talk to us again.
I would be delighted.
Oh, thank you. I shall hold you to that. Look forward to it. Thank you very much. Don't forget to hang on, because we're going to have a short break and then we're going to come back with a genuine chat after the break. So once again, Marcy, thank you very much indeed. And everybody else, I'll see you in a couple of minutes.
If you're a businesswoman who is overwhelmed or suffering from imposter syndrome, who is tired of having one disastrous relationship after another, or who finds it hard just to say no, well, it's time to take care of you. You get the best out of life by contacting Gina Gardner, relationship coach and best-selling author and motivational speaker. Just visit genuinely-you.com. Or you can email Gina directly at gina@genuinely-you.com. Take action now. Start to thrive rather than simply survive. Imagine being a highly successful, enlightened leader who is in complete alignment with your best self, who makes a positive difference on a daily basis. Let me introduce Gina Gardner, an expert in developing transformational leadership with over 30 years of experience. Gina has developed a unique and unrivaled approach to help you step into your genuine power to become an enlightened leader. And when you do, amazing things happen. Go to enlightenedleadership.co or email Gina at gina@genuinely-you.com.
Hello and welcome back. As you know, the second part of the Thriving Not Surviving show is a genuine conversation with my friend Rachel Davidson. Now, Rachel is a number one international best-selling author. She writes incredible spiritual novels, so go and check them out on Amazon. The Point of Me, The Truth of Her, and her third book is about to come out. So, on the lookout for that. So what are we going to talk about today? Today I want to talk about loneliness, and it's one of those things that I think many people have moments of loneliness, and other people spend a huge amount of their time feeling lonely. And I want to make the distinction, because there's loneliness when you are completely on your own and there's no other distractions and there's nobody there. But there's also loneliness when you're part of a relationship or within a crowd. And each of them are difficult to deal with, and I think probably need a different approach. So let's start with loneliness when you're spending time, a lot of time on your own. Mm-hmm. And earlier this year, with the coronavirus and lockdown, many people were experiencing loneliness in a way that they hitherto hadn't done, because they weren't able to get out, they weren't able to in the same space as other people while they were in lockdown and keeping themselves safe. So loneliness, Rachel, for you, what does that mean?
I think you have to differentiate between loneliness, which feels to me like it's something that is external and happening to you, versus solitariness, which is a state of mind, something that comes from within. So, I mean, I live a relatively solitary life. I think that's true of most writers, because, of course, we don't have to go out to, well, I mean, you know, if you're doing it full time, you don't go out to an office and write. And even when you are writing, possibly in a coffee shop or whatever, you're still being a very solitary on your own kind of job. There's not a lot of need for sort of coming together and chatting to your colleagues about it, because, you know, it's your story and you've got to write it. So I'm pretty okay with being on my own, but that is different from being lonely. And I have experienced loneliness whilst in a relationship, whilst going to lots of social events and apparently being surrounded by friends, and yet feeling completely disconnected from it and sort of trying to figure out what the hell was wrong with me. Why was I lonely when, you know, here I was at yet another party with all of these people, and I was talking. I mean, I wasn't standing up by the wall, which is probably where I would be more comfortable. So I really think that loneliness is, I think it's very endemic in society, And B, I think it really is a state of mind, and it is a signal that you're not in your right place. If you're feeling lonely, where you are isn't suiting something. So you need to reach out and try and find connection. And that may be as simplistic as going and finding a person to talk to, but it may actually be something a little bit more around what you're doing, why you're doing it, you know, where your direction of your life is going. For me, I needed to ditch that relationship.
Okay. Now, there's lots of points to unpick there. I want to focus in the first instance on when people are literally, physically on their own and feeling lonely. And I think there are certain groups of people where this is a real challenge. And I think, you know, the elderly, for example, you know, they've had busy lives. Their families have left home if they have a family. And they're then left spending huge amounts of time on their own with the company only of the telly and maybe the cat or their pet. Mm-hmm. And I think for many of them, one of the issues that heightens the feeling of loneliness is that they feel they have no real purpose. Yeah. And I think, you know, when you have a great sense of purpose, you don't feel on your own because you are busy focusing on making that purpose work. But I think for a lot of people who retire, for example, their sense of self, their sense of being enough is tied up entirely with being whatever their job may be. It's become their identity. And when that identity is no longer available to them, they don't feel that they have that same sense of worth.
Yeah.
Now, that lack of purpose, I think, is true for pretty well any age group. If you are not doing something that you feel is valuable, if you don't feel enough, then it's very, very easy for that to slip into a sense of loneliness. And then with loneliness comes depression, anxiety, and all of the other things. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, many times I work with clients who are depressed. And when you start to unpick what's going on, being lonely is a significant element of that, and looking at why they feel lonely is really important, because unless you know what's going on, you can't find a solution. So I think for me that there are a number of things that you can do for yourself if you are feeling lonely, and I also want to talk about what other people can do in terms of helping people who are lonely. And the first is to recognize for yourself, are you feeling lonely because you don't feel worthy, you don't have a purpose, you don't have a sense of being enough? Because if that's the case, then the antidote to feeling lonely is to find something that fills you up.
Yeah.
It can be creativity, it can be spending time in nature, it can be helping other people. But whatever it is, it's recognizing that if you are feeling lonely, it's because there's a gap in your life. And the gap isn't necessarily another person. Because the challenge is, if you're only prepared to allow yourself to feel complete when you are part of a partnership or when you're with the family, then you're completely dependent upon that circumstance being there, and that's not always possible.
Yeah.
I'm reminded of how many clients, for example, that I've worked with who are going through a breakup of a relationship, or are between relationships, or have become divorced, whether that's a formal divorce or divorced from the person that they cared about or their family or whatever.
Yeah.
And how frightened those people are of being on their own.
Yeah.
And that they would do almost anything rather than spend time in the house on their own. And there's a number of things, elements to this. And one is that they've handed over the responsibility of their emotional well-being to somebody else.
Yeah.
And when that somebody else or some other people, not just one person, isn't there, then they don't have any sense of of personal well-being, because the elements that they've created that build that structure that helps them feel enough is no longer there.
Yeah.
I mean, we've talked often, haven't we, about the most important relationship that we have is the relationship we have with ourselves.
Yeah.
And learning to be comfortable in our own skin, learning to be comfortable with who we are, I think is one of the most powerful ways to avoid feeling lonely.
Mm. But it's also a long lifetime of attempting that.
I think so. It's not a done deal, is it? Because we go, we'll go through periods where things feel right, and then emotionally something will have happened and we will revert back to that old sense of loneliness.
Yeah.
And that's why I think doing the deep dive work on oneself is so important. That, you know, if you have done the work on yourself, if you have a great relationship with yourself, it doesn't mean that you'll never feel unhappy and never feel lonely, but the chances are you will feel less lonely less often because you are comfortable in your own skin.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, we come into the world alone and we go out of the world alone. And in actual fact, of course, we're only ever viewing the world through our own singular viewpoint.
That's absolutely true. And, you know, we talk about, you know, seeing the world through rose-tinted glasses. Mm. If you want to see a different world, then you need to change perspective, put a different pair of metaphorical glasses on.
Yeah, I mean, if you're not comfortable with the company of yourself, then you're sort of in a constant terror of fleeing something that... Yeah. You know, you're never going to be able to flee. So, the main work around anybody who is chronically lonely, the main work would be to, you know, explore the answers within first, as you say, to identify what's up. I mean, it could be a very simple problem. It could just be that you're craving the company of humans. We are, after all, herd animals, aren't we?
Very social animals. And so going on to, what are the antidotes to loneliness? And I would say, if you are somebody who is lonely, reach out. You know, reach out to other people. Be the one that initiates the phone call. Mm. And I think what many people do is that they make up this story in their head that nobody wants to talk to me. Nobody cares about me.
Yeah.
And so they don't make the first move.
Yeah.
And as a result, nothing happens because, again, they're expecting other people to take responsibility. Mm. And, you know, one of the, a great way of combating loneliness is to focus on doing something which will make other people feel less lonely.
Yeah.
So join a voluntary organisation. At least then you have things in common.
Yeah.
You know, there are phone buddying groups where you, if you can't leave the house, you can still have contact through phone, Zoom, or Skype. And whilst that doesn't give you the physical presence of another person, energetically, you're still connected. We're in different places today where we normally sit on the same settee to do this.
Yeah.
And yet we are connecting together. And through this, we're connecting with other people around the world.
Mm.
And I think, you know, my dad used to say, particularly, but both parents, if I was feeling fed up or didn't know, you know, what to do, was bored, his comment was always, go and do something that makes a positive difference to other people. And yes. It's been a great principle of my life that, you know, when I have been fed up, and there have been times, and those people who know my story know that there have been some pretty dark and bleak times.
Yeah.
But having a purpose which is, okay, what can I do rather than what can't I do? And how can I make a positive difference? Even if it's just making somebody smile because I phoned them to say, thinking about you, or I texted them to say, how are you?
Mm.
Makes you feel better.
Yeah.
And, you know, loneliness is one of those things that becomes pernicious. As people feel lonely, so their capacity to step out of that place and to take action to dispel that loneliness becomes more and more limited. The feeling of rejection and the stories that we make up in our head when we're feeling lonely about nobody cares, nobody loves me, yeah. I'm all alone, poor me. Yeah. Loneliness is a great way of getting into victim mode. And as soon as you do that, there are no resources available to you.
No. No, I mean, that sort of poor me energy is always a difficult one to break, always. But, you know, I guess the bottom line, without sounding too harsh about it, the bottom line is it, you're the one feeling this. So you're the one who has to go do something. So although it does feel harsh when you're in that disconnected, suppressed feeling, it can be very hard to find that you've got the strength to go do and to fight off the stories. They'll be busy, they'll be there. The secret is to do it in small little steps.
Absolutely. So the interesting thing is breaking states. So you're sitting in a chair. Yeah. You've been watching the telly, and if you're anything like me, then daytime television doesn't do it for you. And you think, oh, so get up, go and make yourself a cup of tea or a cup of coffee. Mm. Go for a walk, get out in nature. Mm. Listen to an uplifting podcast, something like this. Mm. Join a group like Genuinely You, where you have an opportunity to talk to other people and will always respond. Mm. You're not on your own unless you make that active choice to be on your own.
Yes.
If you want to be part of a group of like-minded people where there is interaction and people truly care, come and join the Thrive Together tribe. Yep. You know, there are lots of things that you can do if you're listening to this and you're feeling lonely, where you don't have to be on your own. And I'd like to spend the last few minutes of this genuine chat talking about when you feel on your own and you're in a relationship, when you feel on your own and you're within a family. And it's so easy to make those stories up about nobody cares, nobody's noticing. And, you know, I've known clients where they're very good at the and the sigh and the droop, expecting other people to mind read how they're feeling. And then we talk.
When you're in a relationship, it can feel a lot more acute, because there is the logic that says, I've got a partner and they're supposed to see me and they don't. And almost, absolutely. I think that's a much more bitter pill in many regards. But it's amazing how many people just do exist within that state.
They do. And, you know, I think for me, it's important to try everything you can within that relationship to make that relationship work. Mm. And that may be going to the person that you live with and saying, I'm feeling really fed up. What I need from you is I need a hug. Mm. Or what I need is, can you stop what you're doing and talk to me, or can we arrange to talk? Mm. Because I'm feeling lonely. Mm. But what many people do is they expect the other person to mind read. Mm. And then there's a double whammy, because they're feeling lonely and then they're feeling let down and disappointed because the other person hasn't noticed. Mm. Now, I absolutely accept there are relationships where the relationship actually is toxic and needs to end. But many relationships could be saved and become great relationships if people were much more honest about how they're feeling.
Yeah, I think the vast majority of people who are lonely within relationships and sort of, you know, have existed in that state for a long time is because the relationship actually isn't obviously toxic. It's just a low-grade negligence that's going on. And that's much, much harder to identify and you know, feel that you ought to do something about it.
It's a bit like the frog, that dreadful frog experiment, isn't it? If you drop the frog into hot water, it jumps out. If you drop the frog into cold water and turn the heat on gently, people don't notice. I'm not suggesting anybody does that. Please don't try that at home.
No killing of frogs.
but I think it's very true in terms of relationships. Now, we're getting to the end of our time together. And so what I want to say to you is, if you're feeling lonely, if when you listen to this, you're feeling lonely at this time, then please reach out. You can find us at genuinely-you.com. That's genuinely-you.com. You can email me at gina@genuinely-you. We're on Facebook at Genuinely You with Gina Gardner. I'm on LinkedIn, Instagram. Reach out. If you need some help, help is available. If you go onto the website, lots and lots of free resources, lots of positive podcasts and articles for you to use that can help you get into a better frame of mind. But if you need some help, it's really important that you reach out. And I want to say that this isn't just about personal life. You can feel really lonely in your professional life. If you're a leader, it's a very lonely position at times. So reach out, go to enlightenedleadership.co. All of the websites and the things that are in the show notes, but please take some action. Just that small action of reaching out can help you feel less lonely. You will find us also on Patreon. Come and join us, whichever platform you use, come and join us. And feel that you do matter, that we value you, that we're going to listen and we're going to see you. So whatever you're feeling, please let us know and let us help. Thank you very much for joining us today, and we'll see you on the next show. Take care, with lots of love. Bye now.